Give sport with gifts from Nike. From the retro Vomero 5 sneaker designed with Zoom air cushioning to fleece engineered with lightweight warmth and next-level comfort, we have the perfect gift for any athlete on your list. Shop now at your nearest Nike store.
When you share your food, you share your heart. So what's on your table this holiday season? Save on your festive feast at Kroger with delicious deals on all the holiday classics. Or wow the crowd with something new, like a quinoa stuffed butternut squash. It's sure to add a pop of color to your spread. How about a sweet potato casserole with a crunchy oat streusel topping? Made with care for the sweet tooth and the savory tooth. With Kroger, fill your table with love and watch as your guests' hearts get as full as their bellies. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Last Word on Today FM.
And so for our final live Last Word on Sport of the Year, we've decided to look back over the big highlights of 2024. And we're delighted to be joined, as ever, by Will O'Callaghan from the Off the Ball, the host of the Hurling Pod, who's with us every Monday, and one of our regular contributors, Gavin Cooney, sports writer with 42.ie, and of course also very involved in writing the excellent sports book with Conor Nyland, The Racket. Thank you very much, both of you, for being with us. Let's start with football, though. Gavin, I'm going to start with you, and I suppose you were at the Euros, which Spain won when they beat England. But I suppose England have figured so much in our football year because they were at the Euros. It seemed all of Ireland just did not want them to win the Euros because of the style of football they were playing. And then when they did start scoring goals, it happened to be against us, easily winning in Lansdowne Road, taking it easy on us, and then thumping us in Wembley.
Yeah, curious year for England. Obviously, it was the end of Gareth Southgate's reign. We didn't particularly want them to win the Euros the last time either. And in both of the previous Euros, in fairness, England delivered on that front. So close in their own Euros at Wembley 3 years ago in the penalty shootout. They were, I thought, distinctly second best to Spain in the final this time around. And they also
and
benefited
throughout the tournament.
They benefited from the easy side of the draw. They did not play good football for almost all of that tournament, apart from maybe the first half of the semi-final against the Netherlands. And Gareth Southgate just really lost the run of himself. He kind of, having been a very disciplined and tactically adept figure throughout his reign, he just kind of lost the run of himself and tried to accommodate all of his superstars in the same team, trying to pick Foden and Bellingham and Kane and all these guys together. It just didn't work. It was just a bit of a mess. And Spain were like really worthy winners of that tournament. And in fairness, Cole Palmer scored a brilliant equalising goal in the final. But, you know, in the last couple of minutes, Spain popped up with the winner and it was richly deserved. And then, as we say, Lee Carsley, who, you know, at the start of this year, we thought he might end the year as Ireland manager instead of that strange interim period in charge of England. And aside from losing at home to Greece at Wembley, did a great job and so comfortable in beating us 2-0 in Dublin. And then you could make a case that Ireland played better in the Wembley game, certainly in the first half, but Liam Scales' red card precipitated a collapse and a fairly brutal 5-0 defeat.
Yeah, and that's the reason I'm bringing England up, because I suppose that those two results, I think, will show just how far off the pace the Irish international team is. And for all the hopes that, oh, a manager can solve it, I mean, really, what does Heimir Hallgrímsson got to work with to turn Ireland around?
Yeah, it's a pretty difficult Nations League campaign. The exception of the two games against Finland, who didn't look good and ultimately were automatically relegated from our Nations League group, Ireland looked out of their depth in the other games. I thought away to Greece, except for the time that they were chasing the game and it was kind of throwing the game plan out the window and having a go, it was a really, really difficult night. The game at home was a very, very poor performance off the back of the England game, where really Ireland were outclassed throughout the game. And that first 45 minutes at Wembley, Ireland did a really good spoiling job and went out entirely to try and stop England from playing. But once they went down to 10 men, there was no way to readjust within the match at all, and like to five goals stuck past them. Heimir Hallgrímsson can have that setup where he wants to be difficult to break down and wants Ireland to be good at set pieces and all of these kind of basics that he wants to be in place, particularly when the World Cup qualifying campaign comes around. But there were very few mercies to be able to pull from that Nations League campaign overall, with the exception of maybe how they played in the second half, I think, of the away to Finland.
And yet we have now the playoff matches coming up in the Nations League to remain in that second division, second tier. And we have all the World Cup playoff matches coming up. And I think at this stage, there's very limited expectation, is there, that we're going to actually be able to qualify for the World Cup?
Yeah, we haven't been to either of the previous two Euros, and that's the 24-team tournament. So there are only 16 European teams going to the next World Cup. It's very hard to construct an argument that Ireland will be among them. They'll be in the group with either Denmark or Portugal will be the top seeds, depending on who wins.
Who do we want from that?
Denmark. Yeah. I know we're sick of playing Denmark.
Yeah. not Portugal.
The devil you know.
I remember that pre-Euro playoff game, or pre-friendly against Portugal, and it just sends shivers down the spine, doesn't it?
Yeah, pumped us in June, like so easily. So Denmark are the easy one there, and easier one there, sorry. And Hungary then are the second seeds. And
they're not mugs either, are they?
No, the hope is we might get them on the decline. We obviously beat them in a pre-Euros friendly, however much you can read into that.
They weren't great in the Euros either, other than afterwards.
Out of a group with Scotland, like, that's not great, you know? So
bad memories of our last trip to Armenia as well.
Yeah. So, look, second place will get Ireland a playoff. You have to top the group to qualify automatically. It's highly unlikely. But the silver lining of this year is we have effectively qualified for Euro 2028, if people want to be patient.
Thank you, Caseman Park.
Because Caseman Park's not being built, which means Northern Ireland don't get the wild card into the tournament for co-hosts, which heightens the likelihood that we'll get it. So, you know, not all bad this year.
And we should also mention as well the women's football team, because, you know, this Eileen Gleeson is now going as manager, the disappointment of losing the playoff to qualify for the Euros over two legs. Gavin, where does this leave women's football?
Yeah, it's massively disappointing. I mean, all of the like overall infrastructure and investment issues we have in the men's game, you can multiply them for the women's game, to be quite honest. This is a huge missed opportunity. This team was good enough to qualify for the Euros. It's a waste of the peak years of Katie McCabe and Denise O'Sullivan, to be quite honest.
How much longer can we expect them to be influential international players?
You would hope that they would still be as influential in the next campaign for the World Cup. But beyond that, like, you are expecting a bit much. We already expect too much of McCabe, I think. You know, if she basically has to put the team on her back, really, to qualify, and her performance level in that playoff against Wales was not where it can be, unfortunately.
No, frustrating. She was trying to do everything. And that spine of that team, while there is some youth and injection of players that have declared in recent times, right down the middle of the team. So you look at, say, Niamh Fahey, Louise Quinn, who were both Centurions, but well into their 30s at this stage. You look at, obviously, McCabe and O'Sullivan, who've got a lot of football behind them. There's a lot of players now who are going the wrong side of 30 within this group as well. Mm. And it was kind of bizarre that Ruaisha Littlejohn had to talk about the infrastructure of football in this country moments after the full-time whistle went.
Are we getting, after the World Cup in Australia, are we getting more and more girls playing football? Are they interested? Are the facilities there for them? Because we know we've spoken a lot about Gaelic games and the difficulties for women's Gaelic football and camogie in finding playing facilities when the boys are letting them be used. Mm. It's the same happening in football.
I still think that for the best part, when it comes to developing elite players, they're now being encouraged massively to go and play in the Women's Super League or to play in the second.
At a grassroots level, like, I mean, there has been a massive increase in participation, partly because of the World Cup, but the FAI say 33%, only 33% of clubs in Ireland have female-only toilets. I mean, like, there's a massive problem there that will take years and a hell of a lot of money to address.
Okay, and then for Irish football, I mean, an awful lot of attention on the fact that Shamrock Rovers, fair play in the European Conference League, have managed to qualify for the knockout stages, which is much better than any Irish domestic team, I think, has done in living memory. But big crowd at the FAI Cup final. Great idea as well, coming up in the new year, of Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians playing in the Aviva as sort of an opening match of the season. But what state really is League of Ireland football in?
It's bumping against its glass ceiling, really, or its corrugated iron roof ceiling, because unfortunately the facilities are only large enough. There is a big swell of support for the league. The attendances in a European context are very respectable. If you plot all the average attendances on a league table across Europe, the League of Ireland will be upper mid table. But it's kind of almost out of room for growth now. The smart idea is the one that you referenced, that Bows are taking a home game against Shamrock Rovers to the Aviva, and they will hopefully get a crowd of 30,000 plus at that. So
I think that's a fantastic idea for kicking off the season, isn't
great
it?
Idea, just, yeah.
And yet there are some critics giving out about it. I mean, Isn't this one of the problems in an awful lot of the fan base? Even they just don't like any criticism that they've come outside. They feel it's badly motivated, even it might be positively motivated. And then when ideas are up, oh no, we couldn't be doing that.
I did laugh at the Bows fans saying, we're giving up home advantage.
I move into the south side.
I know. But Bowes, I think, won 4 home games this year. Like, I mean, their home record was abysmal. I mean, it's not much of an advantage.
And they play each other an insane amount of times at Dalymount Park, it seems, as well. So it's not like as if, you know, this is actually changing all that much for Shamrock Rovers. This is they're very much familiar with the venue. I think it's a really good idea. I think the one thing that's crying out for the League of Ireland maybe to go to that next level, and I appreciate that there is a ceiling because of purely you can't get more people into the grounds, is that the League of Ireland looks so much better when it's shown at a good ground.
Oh, yeah.
To TV. And this one is going to be televised on that Sunday afternoon as well. So it means that actually you're going to get a lot of eyes on the product and people are watching at the Aviva Stadium. It might necessarily, because it's first weekend of the season, be a particularly great game. And I wonder what Shamrock Rovers squad is going to look like at that point as well. Even for their knockout game in Europe, the fact that Johnny Kenny is going to be gone, the fact that Neil Ferrugia is going to be gone, there's a lot of work possibly on the rebuild. And Shamrock Rovers are a strange one as well, Matt, when you consider their league form was so patchy and so poor in that slow bicycle ride that was the title race that they potentially could have won it despite playing so poorly.
Yeah, but it was a great finish this season, wasn't it? Even if you say that teams were sort of tripping over themselves, it did do a lot for the visibility of the league that you had Shelburne there, that you had a whole load of teams from the year before Shelburne won it.
Duffer makes such a difference as well.
Yeah, he does. And having had a genuine international and Premier League star so committed to the League of Ireland, how much does that help, Gavin?
It was a kind of a perfect storm in terms of attention for the League of Ireland. Duff is just brings mainstream eyeballs to the league because he's so charismatic. He is, you know, one of the most famous people to be involved in the League of Ireland in a very, very long time. And there's no irony about him. He's so committed. He's all in. And is, you know, he's just so quotable from a media point of view. So that's great. But that has to be matched with the drama on the field and the fact that it was his Shelburne team that ultimately won like a real underdog victory, one of the best in Irish sport in many years. And that the title race is so dramatic. I mean, there were debates about standards and has the quality gone down? I think Shamrock Rovers have shown that perhaps the quality hasn't gone down. But give us drama over quality every time. Like, that's what engages the floating Irish sports voter to which the League of Ireland hasn't appealed often enough. So it was a great year from that point of view.
Well, we'll be talking about rugby later, and there's a lot of people worried about the Champions Cup and the format. But ironically, in the Champions League has the similar type of format where teams don't play each other home and away in a group stage where you have teams only meeting once, led to a much more exciting early round of the Champions League than perhaps a lot of people had anticipated.
I think it certainly feels fresh. I won't ever mourn what we've left behind in that the group stages have become ridiculously boring and oftentimes with redundant fixtures in the last couple of rounds because the top seeds generally are qualified with a couple of games to spare. Despite the fact that there are some teams at the top, Dortmund, Barcelona, Liverpool particularly, are almost certainly going to go through now.
Yeah, but look at Manchester City are down near the bottom of the qualifiers.
They play PSG, who were finalists just a few years ago, and that game feels like a must win for both sides. And it means that a lot of the top teams in Europe are hitting off each other in a way that they didn't when they were seeded in 4-team groups. So
now, that said, there's an awful lot of thumpings been given out as well. Big scores by the bigger teams against the teams who are struggling at the bottom.
Mm. Yeah. And look, for anyone who's seen this, they've only ever played it in Football Manager up until this point. I think that's only the only real kind of relevance that anyone will have at this stage to go, okay, I know exactly how the top 8 works and this is how the round of 16 goes. We're still kind of feeling it out a little bit.
And what about then the Premier League in England? How much are we enjoying the decline of Manchester City after being dominant for so long?
It's so compelling. I mean, Manchester City have never been more interesting than they are now. I know their supporters. There's always been a sense that they don't have the levels of support commensurate with the dominant team you would expect, but they've never been more interesting than this. What's happening is extraordinary. They won, obviously, in May, a 4th straight league title, the first time it had ever been done in England, never mind just the Premier League. But boy, are they paying for that investment now because the team has got old together. Like some players like Gundogan and these guys in midfield look like they can't run anymore.
Well, that was their own fault for bringing Gundogan back from Barcelona.
Yeah. And it was a curious
and
move.
There are young players in there. There's Guardiola, there's Lewis, there's Foden. They got rid of Palmer, which I'm sure they're regretting now.
Not enough of them.
It's fascinating to watch Guardiola, though, because he looks like a man who's having a nervous breakdown on the sideline.
It was the 3-0 Champions League draw against Feyenoord where he's scratching his face, there's a cut on his nose and his head is covered in these red scratch marks. And you're thinking, this guy, there's something about this man flaying his own skin in public that makes me think he's not great in a crisis. And I doubt that his behaviour on the touchline is helping the players. I think it's probably exacerbating it.
And of course, Jurgen Klopp decided to leave Liverpool and left, I think, beloved by all Liverpool fans for the extraordinary job he did. And suddenly, this Dutchman, Arne Slot, comes in and looks like he might do even better.
Yeah, I mean, look, his start was better than Jurgen Klopp over the first dozen games, and really there's only a couple of blots on the copybook so far. I appreciate they've had a couple of draws over the last couple of weekends in the Premier League, and they lost against Nottingham Forest. But aside from that, they've shown a lot more probably control and restraint than Klopp's team showed. It's worked very well for them in Europe so far. There is an argument to say that if you're not playing quite as high octane as Klopp has played,
yeah, not quite as exciting to watch for the neutral.
Maybe not, but maybe there'll be more energy in reserve for the second half of the season. The Liverpool, where it felt like a couple of seasons they have run out of juice a little bit as the season has gone on. So if you're a Liverpool fan, you have to be delighted by the fact, because often it's a difficult transition. 8-9 seasons of Klopp's style of football, the success that they had, someone new comes in and you're changing the system around and the results don't necessarily follow.
And very briefly, Gavin, Manchester United, Amorim in as manager. Is he going to be the Hal Grimson though for Manchester United that he doesn't have the players, of course, and they actually don't have as much money as you might think to go out and buy the players?
No, because the new financial fair play rules means they don't have a lot of wiggle room because of all the money that's been wasted on mediocrity so far. Amorim has cut an impressive figure like Hal Grimson. He's very good at diagnosing the team's problems and talking with clarity to reassure people, but ultimately the success will come down to the operation around him and Jim Ratcliffe's and Ineos and their ability to sign better players.
The last word on Today FM.
Hi, welcome to IKEA.
Hey, I'm holiday shopping for the family and I heard there's a sale. What's the deal?
That's right, it's the IKEA winter sale now through January 7th. You can save up to 50% on select items in store and online. And if you're an IKEA loyalty member, you can save an extra 10% on select sale items.
Perfect. I need storage help.
Our storage solutions are great for organizing. Shop the IKEA winter sale in-store and online today. Offer valid in the U.S. through 1-7 while supplies last. Selection may vary by store and online. See IKEA-USA.com/winter sale for full terms. Restrictions apply.